Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is the 10th of February 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Once again today I'm joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told and Communism by the Back Door, Mr. Dennis Wise, producer extraordinaire. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine, thanks. I got some good news about the documentaries. They've just been taking some orders from the, you know, the fans of the website, pre-sales, and they've been really, really good for Communism by the Back Door. So it should be on sale to the general public shortly. But at the moment, like, it's looking good for the pre-sales.
Excellent. Yeah, I noticed that you're asking for anyone that wanted to pre-purchase a copy to get in touch. So just remind listeners, if they sign up for Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told or Communism by the Back Door, at the websites there, they can sign up and pre-purchase a DVD, which is obviously it's going to get them a DVD, but that will obviously help you out also, Dennis, I would have thought.
Indeed.
We don't, people... We make a lot of content. There are a lot of content producers about, and we very rarely ask, or we don't ask regularly for contributions, but we do appreciate contributions. We have got a Bitcoin wallet at Radio Aryan, and obviously Dennis puts out his DVDs that people can buy. I mean, even if you've seen Dennis's documentaries already on YouTube and you've watched them for free, that, you know, you can always buy a DVD just to help out with a contribution, and then you can pass the DVD on to someone else and wake them up and bring them along to our movement as well. I mean, I've got a copy of the Adolf Hitler DVD, even though I've watched it, I've lost count of how many times I've actually watched it, more often on the computer than anywhere else. But yeah,
I'm trying to work Bitcoin out. I've been trying to work it out for some time. I still haven't got anywhere with it, so.
Yeah, it seems to be the most useful one, because if you are a nationalist, you're an outspoken nationalist, then using PayPal, you get to use it for a couple of months, and then the Jews put pressure on PayPal themselves to stop making that service available to you, which is, it should be against the law, really. We've discussed this.
It's racism.
Before. Yeah. Well, it's silencing a political opinion, isn't it? And it's taken away the right to engage in business transactions, which everyone should be able to, spend money, save money, and engage in business transactions online and offline. I think it is a human right offline. Banks can't just say to you, no, we're not going to take your money, unless you've actually broken the law.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
How can speaking what you see and hear around you, how can that be breaking the law? You have to... Say it how you see it.
The thing is that with free speech, somebody said the other week that what's the point in with free speech if you only want to hear what you agree with? You've got to have some kind of opinion which you disagree with for free speech to flourish.
Well, yeah, you've got to be able to have a debate, haven't you?
Yeah, otherwise it's just nothing changes, does it? Same old.
Yeah, you have to hear the challenging information, and you have to have your own views challenged, so that you know that they're right. I mean, this is how you get to the truth, isn't it? You debate with people. You learn new things.
Some people don't want to get to the truth, do they? Let's be honest. Let's hit the nail on the head.
Well, I think you're right. You know, there are a lot of people.
I know I'm right. Yeah, you know I'm right. And people out there know I'm right.
Bury their head in the sand and think that ignorance is bliss. And before you know it, things just keep getting worse. If you're like that, they bury their head in the sand, and once they see that there's a few non-whites moving into the area, and then by the time they realise that they should be doing something about it, the area is flooded, and they're a minority. I mean, this is a problem we've had in Britain. You know, people, they keep thinking, well, eventually a government will do something about it, and then look at it now. 60% of London, non-white.
Well, the government's part of the problem. That's what people don't realise.
Well, exactly. This is sort of what we're going to look at tonight is a government that wasn't part of the problem, a government that sorted out this problem, the National Socialist Government I really want to publicize this. I think this is, you know, this is a big gift to the movement, really. It's the original memoirs of Adolf Eichmann. These are the, I'll read out the introduction and so that people can know what they are. And you can find them at revisionist.net, which is run by Simon Shepherd from Heretical Press. And thousands of pounds have actually been spent on getting these memoirs translated into English. On one side of the page, you've got the German, and then on the other side, you've got the English, which can affect Google results because Google don't like things with two translations on them. So it would probably help if listeners could try and publicize this, tweet it or put a link to it on their site. In the introduction on the page, it says, "This is the very first publication in English of Eichmann's original memoirs. There was an obscure publication in German, but practically no one has heard about them. Eichmann details his early life in the NSDAP and gives much detail about the collaboration between Zionists and Nazis." And then there's an authentication bit from Adolf Eichmann's wife, and that says, "My husband Adolf Eichmann composed his memoirs in the years beginning in 1951 up to 1959. He dictated the memoirs continually on a tape recorder. This was then transcribed by typists from the tape to paper. My husband later corrected the work himself in writing and made the corrections in black or partly in violet pencil. My husband composed a part of the memoirs himself by hand, and from the writing then a typed clean copy was prepared. The work was completed in 1959. Therewith, a conclusion should have been reached. My husband explained, this work should be published after my death, and indeed for the benefit of the German post-war generation. At the beginning of 1980, I made this manuscript available to the Druffel publishers in 8131 Leone for publication and gave the work the title I, Adolf Eichmann. Everything else that was published up till now as my husband's memoirs do not correspond to the manuscript that I have presented to the publishers under the mentioned title. These present declarations I attest herewith under oath. They are authentic." So these are the authentic memoirs of Adolf Eichmann. And Adolf Eichmann, people probably aware, was kidnapped by the Mossad back in the late 50s, 60s, and taken to Israel for a show trial. He was kidnapped from Argentina, and then he was tortured, interrogated, and he refused to give in to them and confess to their made-up crimes. And I've had a look through, a bit of a scan through the actual publication. It tells you his whole life, really. It makes it quite clear that, this holohoax that we've been told that went on, this mistreatment of the Jews, none of that went on. This is the guy's innermost thoughts, and he's thinking about nationalism, and he's writing about nationalism, and he is saying that, you know, to be a nationalist is the best possible thing you can do for your people. And he wanted the Jews to be nationalists. He set up Zionist organizations for them because he wanted them to understand nationalism. He wanted the Jews to become nationalists. He said if he was a Jew himself, he would have been the world's greatest Zionist. He wanted the Jews to have a country of their own where they could all move to, where they could enjoy the benefits of doing their best for their people. That was all that he wanted. And then later on, the Jews themselves declared war on Germany. So he was part of the Gestapo then. So the Jews were a part of this organization that had declared war on Germany. Of course, they had to be put in concentration camps. And as the war progressed, the Jews outside of Germany would make more and more threats, more and more against Germany. So the Jews themselves became more and more of a security risk. So they had to be put in these camps, and they were put to work. Of course, some of them died while they were in the camps. And then when the Jews, after the war, got hold of Eichmann, they were telling him that all about 6 million, all these 6 million have been killed. And he was like, well, you're the first ones that are telling me of this. you were the first ones to, I've never heard this figure before. There was no order to go out and kill all the Jews. There was no organized killing of them all. This didn't happen. You know, so a lot of them did die once they were in the camps themselves. Obviously, there was typhus, there was illness, there was Jews that were, you know, guilty of crimes. Don't forget, these Jews had declared war on Germany. So if they're getting caught in acts of sabotage, then, you know, they're going to get shot. A lot of them were shot, but there was no gas chambers. There was no gassings. And this guy himself, Eichmann, he was doing his best to bring the Jews and transport them over to Palestine, which was the agreement that they had. And the war got in the way of that, and the British got in the way of that. And originally in Palestine, the Jews were supposed to have their state over there, and it was supposed to be overseen by the British. It wasn't supposed to be the Jews in charge and encroaching on the Palestinians and stealing their land. It was supposed to be a managed state that was managed by the British under British laws, with the British people being responsible for the actions of the Jews there. And instead of that, it got handed over to the Jews, so they then encroached on the Palestinians. We know all about that. And then they basically broke all the laws. They engaged in terrorism against the British people. They killed British servicemen, blew up the St. David Hotel in Palestine, killing lots of British people. And then when they went and kidnapped Eichmann, I mean, that was against all international law. I don't know what law they did that under. And his first defense was to say, you know, what law have you done this under? How can you try me in a foreign country for crimes supposedly committed in Germany? And they said, oh, the United Nations perfectly agrees with what we've done. They agree with us kidnapping you. It's okay. And the United Nations have okayed this. So, you know, it wasn't just Britain. It was the whole world was going along with this. They were just letting it happen.
It's not really a surprise, really, because what a lot of people fail to realise is that even though Israel was formed in 1948, the Jews formed Israel were actually at war with Germany via other countries and control of other countries by the banks and the finances. So consequently, you could really say that Israel won World War II. And that being so, then as the winners of World War II, the United Nations would not disagree with the Mossad going into wherever, to Argentina, wherever, to kidnap people, because who's going to stop them? I mean, certainly all the Western countries were all back under the Rothschilds' banking system, and the Rothschilds obviously own Israel, so it's not a surprise to me at all that they can get away with what they've got away with, and they've got away with a lot more as well. Which shouldn't be a surprise to people, because, as I say, even though Israel as a country didn't exist during the war, they did in fact win that war.
Well, they obviously won the war. If the United Nations, I mean, that was put together after the war, and that just stands by and gives its blessing on Israel going out and kidnapping people from countries that don't have any extradition agreement with Israel, and then saying that that's fine. I mean, that just shows you, doesn't it? It shows you that Israel are the ones making the laws. We've seen this continue, haven't we? We saw this continue with Ernst Zundel. I believe he left Canada to go to America, and then he got kidnapped from there, taken to Germany for things that he'd written while he was in Canada. That weren't against the law in Canada.
They got him on a debunked passport, and they took him back to Canada. Then he spent 2 years in solitary confinement, and then he was transferred to Germany, where they knew that in Germany it carried quite a lengthy sentence, and he ended up with, on top of the 2 years in Canada, he was another 5 years in Germany, so in total 7 years. And when he was in the United States with his wife, where he should have been relatively safe.
No, he should have been. He should have been completely safe as a Canadian citizen in America. And this is gangland stuff, isn't it? Just suddenly jumping on someone, kidnapping
it's
them.
State tourism, isn't it? Really, it's just they have no regard for international boundaries. But then again, you know, like I said, the winners of World War II, they do get these privileges.
Well, there were quite a few that were still privileged in Germany at the time. I mean, just looking through his memoirs, he talks about how there were Jews. They weren't all locked up in these camps. It was the communists that were locked up in the camps. And because the communists were so overwhelmingly Jewish, run by the Jews, and because the Soviet Union was so overwhelmingly Jewish, it would have been madness to allow those ones out on the streets. It wasn't too good an idea to just allow any old Jew out there, but they did. It was only the ones that were a threat that were really put in these camps. And the whole idea was to remove them out of Germany. And the primary reason for doing that, it was the economy. It was the effect that they had on the economy, the way that they were transferring all the resources to the Jews and making all their money off of usury. Because he talks about how their effects on culture and on the media and the way they took over the newspapers and film and theatre, all of that was of secondary importance. All of that was to cover up what they were actually doing to the economy. And looking at it from the economy, it's an economical necessity that what you produce has to just go to your people. If you've got somebody else there, a middleman, that is siphoning off what you're creating for your people, eventually you're not going to be creating enough for your own people, and your own people are going to suffer. So it's just a simple matter of looking at it like that.
I think the crux of the problem is that not many people look at the Soviets as Jewish, because the press always refer to them as Russian. And so consequently, a lot of people don't realise that most 99.9% of Jews during the 30s and the other 40s were communists. And so, you know, the actual fact that if the communists were put in a camp, it was always all the Jews were put in a camp. But if the communists are running riot, raping throughout Germany and whatever the Bolsheviks got up to, then it was always the Russians. So there's this kind of it's not a confusion, but more of a cover-up.
Well, yeah, and today they will say that the Jews were persecuted for their religion. Whereas if they were communists, they were against religion, weren't they?
Well, they were against religion, and it weren't so much they were persecuted for the religion, they were more persecuted for the subversive actions that they got up to, because obviously, you know, when they're doing things with the economy and they're doing other things with the culture, this annoys the nationalist nation, you know, the nationalists in that country. And it's same in Russia, same in London. Most people say it's 109 countries that got kicked out. I do believe they were kicked out of a part of Guatemala not that long ago, so it's really 110 now.
I remember that happening. Yeah, recently there was a colony of them that was kicked out.
Well, you can't always blame the landlord, you know. After 110 towns being kicked out of a country, you've got to say there's got to be a problem with the occupant.
Well, I think a lot of the problems, I mean, you can trace them back to their religion, to Judaism, which says that it's fine to lie to a non-Jew. Anything that non-Jews are not allowed to have property, anything that the non-Jew has really belongs to the Jew, and the Jew should just be able to take it if he finds it and never hand it back. It belongs to the Jew, as it were. They're told that we're like dogs, basically. We're not worth the life of a dog to a Jew, and we were just created to serve them. So these are the sort of things that their religious book tells them.
Well, the thing is that most people, again, have been taught that it was the Germans, which were the superior, thought themselves as the superior race, whereas openly admitted in the Talmud, it's the Jews themselves go around professing they're the chosen ones, and we are the goyim, the cattle, that we will eventually serve them. in a new world order. So people still can't get their heads around that. They just look at a propaganda piece of maybe Hollywood movie and see a blonde Aryan shouting orders at Jews and it sticks, you know.
Well, this is one of the issues with this as well, I think. People see that, what they have in the Talmud and what the rabbis tell them, and they think, it's this religion that's caused this. It's the rabbis that have caused this. It's because they're following that. So if we can change their religion or get them to stop following it, then they'll be fine. But then you look through history and you look at the ones that said that they had converted to Christianity and became converso Jews, and they caused just as many problems. And they had to have the Spanish Inquisition to stop it.
You don't even know
who
you're talking to after a couple of generations, yet they always know the Jews.
Well, that's why they gotten to wear the yellow star to identify themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people look at that as a sort of detrimental to the Jewish. But when you can't tell from looking at somebody if they're Jewish or not, and you need to because international Jews has declared war on you, and you need to round up the Jews, because not only to put them in camps for the reason, obviously, that they're an enemy of the state, but for their own safety as well. Because if you've got Jews roaming around the country like that, I'm quite sure that they would have been targeted anyway. So for both reasons, and the easiest way to recognise was obviously to put a yellow star on, and so you could see at a moment's notice.
Again, we're told that this is a terrible thing, but who wouldn't want to be wearing a badge or of their own flag? Are you quite happy to wear a Union Jack? I'm sure you'd be quite happy to wear a Union Jack, Dennis. I'm sure our American listeners would be quite happy to wear their flag on a badge. And yet, apparently, with the Jews wearing that badge, this is a terrible thing. This is something that must never be repeated again. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense. And the main problem that that it came down to, as I say, it came down to a matter of economics. And you know, there is only so much stuff that a country can produce, and it should be producing that for its own people. And we're still having this same problem today. We've only got so much that we can produce in Britain. We've only got so many hospitals, we've only got so many houses, we've only got so much schooling, and yet we still keep taking in more and more people from other countries, and they keep telling us that this is good for the economy. It's going to increase the economy, but it doesn't increase the economy. It might make a quick buck for a company that's around for 4 or 5 years that can just employ this really cheap labor for peanuts, but will make all its money, move somewhere else, and all those people that worked for that company will still be in Britain demanding to be housed, demanding to have the free healthcare, the free schooling. So the people that are saying that it's good for the economy to have all this immigration, obviously they haven't got the best interests of the country at heart. And the reason for that, a lot of the time, is because they are these Jews. And this is the same problem that Germany had. They had Jews in the government, Jews in banking, Jews in the media. And to distract people from what was happening economically, they had all the degenerative media that they had, the stuff that they had in the theatres, the stuff that they were putting in the newspapers, in the books, in the films, all the pornography, all the prostitution. And they had the drugs as well at the time. So they were just encouraging people to just get out their heads in a hedonistic way and forget about all the problems that the country was in. And again, that's very similar to today, isn't it?
Well, I find it interesting when they say that, you know, it's good for the economy, because every time you have mass immigration, it drives down wages. I'm sure that people in Europe and throughout the UK are looking at the wages over the last 5-6 years, and really it's really gone down rather than moved up. And it's interesting also that this week they were talking about securing the people, but because they was in the EU and they'd moved over in these previous years before the Brexit vote, that they're going to secure that these people can still remain in this country. And it just crossed my mind, because of the Bosman ruling in football, by the way, the ruling was at one point that you could only use, let's say, 3 foreigners at the most, or 2 foreigners, can't remember now exactly, in the football team, because it would have been against, the fact that English footballs were coming through, and to play any more would have ruined the chances, especially if there were better quality players coming from abroad, which the Bosman ruling, which was a footballer who took the court, the case to court in Europe, and said that freedom of movement in football should be the same as any other industry, which the ruling was then admitted to. So then all of a sudden you got this influx of players where you could have any number of players in a football team. I'm just going to wonder what's happened to them now once we come out to Brexit. Maybe they'll have to go back, I don't know. Because that law won't apply anymore.
Well, we just don't know what's going to be happening with Brexit. I've got a fair bit of creaking there, Dennis, on the line there. I'm not sure what it is. But what you were saying just then about the foreign workers, we're not allowed to speak about this either. If you speak up about this, then it's hate crimes. You know, Amber Rudd, the Home Office Secretary, the Home Secretary, she was giving a speech a couple of weeks back, and she said, we've got to get British businesses employing British people and not bringing in people from abroad to do the work. And she was reported for hate crimes for saying this by a Jewish professor, just for saying that British employers should be employing British people. And straight away, you've got a Jewish professor that's accusing her of hate crimes for this. Now, this wasn't a Jewish business owner, not a factory owner, not a Jewish banker, but a professor at a university.
And that's the same old freedom of speech thing that we talked about early on, where they'll cut it off with what they call hate crime.
Right, it just shows you the way that they work together as a unit. You know, there wasn't a conspiracy there. No, nobody phoned up the professor and said, oh, you need to complain because our businesses aren't going to be doing very well from this. You know, this Jewish professor just phoned up anyway and reported it as a hate crime. Because he instinctively knew that if British businesses were encouraged to employ British people, then the Jews that run a lot of the businesses and the banks aren't going to get so much money. And of course, it also means that if we're allowed to speak freely about things like this, then everyone is going to work out who it is that's responsible for all the destruction that we've seen to our countries. And that's the point of this hate speech legislation, is to stop us from being able to even put into words what's going on, so that we can't.
It stops people down the track. So it frightens people, doesn't it? Because everybody else then is obviously wary of seeing someone out of order in their own country.
So you can't identify the enemy. I don't know whether they had. I'm not sure whether they had this hate crime legislation or anything similar like this during the Weimar period. I know in the USSR they made anti-Semitism a capital offence. If you criticised the Jews, you could be executed for it. Now, I don't know where that stood in Germany at the time. Maybe they had anti-Semitism laws. I'm not sure. Do you know anything about that, Dennis?
What year are you talking now?
Well, in the Weimar period before
the Weimar.
Yeah.
No, as far as I can recall, I can't think of any.
I'm sure. I mean, obviously, Adolf Hitler did get accused of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, that would have been obviously when he rose to power. Like, but after World War One, I don't think there any particular laws helping the Jews. But then again, I could be wrong.
And this has all come about after the war, isn't it? They thought, well, we can't risk anything like this happening ever again. We're going to have to make anti-Semitism against the law, and if we do that, then we're going to get singled out. So we have to make racism against the law as well, and say that they can't speak out against the blacks. Because this is the thing, you know, that it's all about trying to protect the Jews. All this,
they're putting other people in front of them to hide behind them. If you like, exactly true. And the blacks to use, obviously, because I watched a thing the other day, a video of some kind of a hip hop artist. He turned up late for an interview, and he was being asked by a fellow coloured interviewer how come he was late. And the guy turned around and said, "Hey nigger, just be glad I'm here, nigger." So they actually say the word the cells.
Well, it's okay for them to say it. This is one of the things that really gets me. I mean, yeah. That's an English word. It's our language, our English language, that we've been told we're not allowed to use. And the excuse that they had for not being able to say nigger is because that was the word used for black slaves in America. And yet we never had any black slaves in Britain. Black slaves were never called nigger in Britain. The word nigger was just a friendly word used for pets, things like that. I mean, the pet dog was called nigger. I forget the name of the guy. It's quite a famous film. I think it was Bulldog Drummond, something like that. And the pet dog was called nigger. So it was obviously an affectionate term for a Negro. All it is is a shortened Latin term for black, nigra. And that's all it was. It was never used in a negative way in Britain. And yet this political correctness, this, oh, you can't use that term, managed to make its way over here. And I can remember thinking this when it happened, because it was quite often used. I remember thinking, well, why is this? It's not. I can understand in America it was a derogatory term, but it's not a derogatory term in Britain. Well, and I think that must have been my first real awareness of political correctness.
What I find really strange is if they're really serious about all this, then why are they showing programmes like Rising Damp on TV today and other 70s type programmes which do have that, you know, racial humour? It's certainly not banned from television.
Why don't they try and censor them?
Well, I watched a couple of programmes last week.
We used to have In Sickness and in Health with Alf Garnett and all these other characters.
And yeah, but there's still some on TV.
A lot of it was racist humour.
Yeah.
I suppose they try to get us to point at them now and say, oh, how terrible that was.
Well, it's harmless, wasn't it? I mean, Bernard Manning was another one, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't a racist in real life, but he obviously the humour of them particular jokes. I mean, you listen to comedians today and it's like watching paint dry.
Yeah, that was that noise just then.
Oh, that's my headphone rubbing against my shoulder.
I imagine you knew with a great big pair of headphones there on your head, some old 70s style, a couple of speakers strapped to your head.
Yeah, I'm like an airline pilot.
Astronaut.
I said, yeah, well, I don't believe in them these days.
Well, it's just thinking then, I mean, you compare the way that what they try to do with our television today and politically correct it and take out anything that's patriotic, and you've got to be negative about Britain. I mean, there's just been a TV advert that's been pulled off the television. I think it says something like, what is there good about England? And then the people just sort of don't say anything, questioning, and that was it. And that was this TV advert.
And they pulled that, didn't they?
Yeah, it's been pulled due to complaints. And you think that, you know, this is what they do today. And when you look back to Germany, they cleaned up all the films. They took out anything that was pornographic. They said that you can't see anybody being shot in any films. We don't want anyone going off to war and seeing them killed. They wanted to put across a family feel and, you know, morals. They wanted to give people good morals and good manners and positive things to think about.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't want them to have anti-heroes, which is what we have today. You know, if you have a hero today in Hollywood, he's always got to be flawed. He's always got to be a flawed hero.
The strong feminine and the weaker man. And in the commercials, you see it quite often. That always, 9 times out of 10, it's a mixed family they're showing in TV commercials.
Well,
it's all an agenda.
And well, the hero's always got to, he's always got to be an alcoholic or a womanizer or a gambler. He's always got to have these things wrong with him. Whereas before, you would have a hero that was virtuous, you know, he was a good guy. That was why he won, because he was a good guy. Now you have people winning, and it's an anti-hero, and the guy that wins probably shouldn't have won.
And it's like a homosexual or transgender, as long as it runs with the current agenda. Could even talk about James Bond being black next one.
I'm surprised they haven't done that yet. Yeah. Black Doctor Who?
Imagine that. You know, there's something to that. Oh, another one I forgot about is that the FA, I heard the other day, was considered now too white. The people on the board of the FA, especially the older generation, they're being asked to vacate their seats to allow coloured representatives to come on the FA, on the English FA, and represent football as it is today, which, if you notice, every time a goal scored and a group of players hug each other, they're more or less all black.
Yeah, it makes a mockery of it, really, doesn't it? I mean, football is to be about the people from that area, from that county, that were competing against the other county to see who was best. And if you've got a homogeneous nation, then that's going to be equal, isn't it? You've got two groups of people from the same race, around about the same age, and it's even. If you bring in different races, then things aren't going to be equal. It's like having running races. When you introduce Negroes into a running race, they've got completely different bone structure to us, completely different muscle structure, different amounts of testosterone that they produce. Completely different, which is why when you see the Olympics, you always see all the blacks running together in these races with no white faces. It's because they've got a different physique. And yet,
and not swimmers.
Yeah. Again, because they've got this different physique, they've got a heavier bone structure and they've got a smaller chest cavity. So these physical differences affect them in sport, and that that's okay. You'll say, oh yeah, the blacks, they're great at basketball, they're great at running. But then if you highlight the things that we get good at, if you highlight our intelligence, then you're being a racist. And you're going to be attacked. Everything has been turned around to be anti-white, anti-European. And the only reason that can be is because we've got an alien group that are at the top of our establishment. I mean, there's no other explanation for it, is there?
That's, I think that's well established to people who research, but it's the general public who I feel are still pretty naive to all this.
Well, they are. I think a big problem with it is because National Socialism has been so demonised, because Adolf Hitler has been so demonised, it's the last thing they want to believe is that actually he was a good guy. And actually he was 100% correct. And the Jews were running everything in Germany, and they were running everything in the other countries, and they do have plans to take over the world with a one world government. And people don't want to believe it. Even in the conspiracy circles that study the conspiracies know that these multinational corporations are taking everything over, that they still don't want to believe that Adolf Hitler was the good guy, because it's been so demonized.
One of the big things is that they didn't want to really think that their ancestors were fighting on the wrong side. I mean, you know, everyone likes to think that they're uncles and the fathers and everybody else and grandfathers were all fighting for a true cause. But when you get to the bottom of it and you really look at World War II, then we were all fooled. The people of the Western armies were led by Freemasons and fooled into this fight with Germany, where really, when you take a step back, and it was the protection of communism in Europe, which was the reason they were over there.
We had the First World War as well, and the Balfour Declaration, like you show in your documentary. And this didn't just start with the Second World War. It didn't just start after the Versailles Treaty. And it started a long time before that. And if you look at, even before that, if you look at the Jews when they came into Europe and what they did in the countries that they came into, which is why there were those 109 countries that they were removed from. And in every one, it was for the same problems. It was for the blood sacrifice. It was for the kidnapping of Christian children and crucifying them and draining them of their blood. And it was also because of usury. It was because of loaning out money to the poor so that they could then buy the alcohol that the Jews were selling them, and then taking their house off them when they couldn't pay it back.
Yeah, nothing changes really, does it? I mean, even the slave trade. I mean, you watch. some of these Spielberg films, and it's all about black slaves. But really, when you research, you know, white slavery was even before any blacks were even brought to America. The white slaves from Ireland were sent over, especially to the Caribbean and places like that, and in Eastern Europe, the Jews had the monopoly on that market of white women. I've had for about 200 years, still do today.
So the Jews were involved in that as well. Would this have been when the Muslims were in control of Spain around that time?
Well, it goes back even to the days of Caesar. The Jews used to follow Caesar around as he went from country to country conquering, and they would take the contraband, which would be, you know, the first access to the slaves.
Ah, yeah, because when Constantine became emperor, and when he pronounced Christianity, right, the religion of the empire, he banned all the Jews from owning Christian slaves, didn't he?
Correct, yeah. Well, they just waited for the next one to come along and then jump back in again. And of course, a lot of people would fall to the bribes, etc. But certainly there was a book written by a Jew, and it was printed, believe it or not, in the New York Times, which is a Jewish newspaper, as you know. And he did an article called the Contraband of Women. And this was about it was centered around Moscow and the Ukraine capital, Kiev. And it showed how the networks released trafficking women to Japan and Thailand. And all these thousands of Slavic women were forced to work as prostitutes. And even then they sent them to the West towards the Adriatic coast and beyond. And some even managed to make New York and a couple of other cities in America. So it was a very, very well run operation. And the press would always regard these people as Russian, but not as Jews. And of course, when the mafia, when the fall of the Soviet Union, a lot of these people went to America. It's always the Russian mafia, but these were actual communist Jews or Bolsheviks who would be the ruthless crime gangs on the East Coast.
And they also refer to them as prostitutes as well, instead of slaves.
Yeah, rather than slavery, yeah. It's a press thing, because obviously the press is obviously biased being Jewish. But there's another one in 1982, another Jew, Edward Bristow, he wrote a book called Prostitution and Prejudice, and that revealed the recruiting of Polish girls under false pretenses. And they were transported to brothels in Turkey and Egypt, even Hungary. And the centre, we were talking about this a little bit earlier on, the centre of the trade for these girls was a little town in Poland called Auschwitz, which in German is Auschwitz.
Well, there's a bit of a coincidence there. How far back was that going on then?
This is, well, he wrote the book about 1982. He didn't really state a date, but obviously it's more modern times, you know.
This was modern times. I remember hearing about them, you know, all the Slavic girls that were in Israel that were basically kept like slaves as prostitutes for the Jews. Obviously, yes. they wouldn't say that they were slaves, or that's what had happened to them. I remember reading some of the National Socialist literature, which was explaining about the Jew. I think it might have been the Jew as criminal. And it was talking about the way that the Jews did that, and how they would convince a girl that they were going to marry them, and that they were well off, and that they were rich, and then they would take them out to South America, and then they would be prostitutes. So they'd be away from their families, and they would have to work in these brothels for these Jews. And it was a really common trick that they used to pull. I'm sure it's the Jewish criminal, because it has a different chapter for all the different crimes that the Jew was known for. And white slavery, white trafficking was a very, very well-known one. And again, this is a politically corrected term that they use for it today. Instead of talking about the Muslim rape gangs and the sex slavery that goes on there, they will say, oh, it's child trafficking. Or it's human trafficking is what they would call it. But what it is, what the Muslims are doing is sex slavery, exactly the same as ISIS are doing out in Syria, and exactly the same as has gone on with Muslims right the way back to the 6th, 7th century when it first started. This sex slavery is an intrinsic part of it. So when they say, oh, well, these Muslims are involved in these grooming gangs, they're not observant Muslims. They're not the religious type of Muslims. Well, they're carrying out exactly what the Quran tells them is fine to do with the kafir. You know, the Jew calls us a goyim and the Muslim calls us a kafir. And it's pretty much the same thing in both those books. We're just there to be slaves to them. With the Muslims,
The problem is when you say slave or mention slavery, the automatic brainwashing has brought about the average person will just think black slaves and white masters. When consequently, it's been anything but over the centuries.
Well, they do say that the word slave actually comes from the word Slav, because of so many Slavs that have been enslaved by the Muslims. I remember reading that there was 1 million white slaves just taken by the Muslims when they were operating out of Morocco there, before we put a stop to it. I mean, that was 1 million white slaves that were taken, kidnapped. I mean, these boats would come as far as Ireland and Iceland, and they would just come ashore at night and kidnap everyone, take them all away. And the women would be used as slaves, and the men would be castrated or used as assassins. And the same thing went on right the way up to the 20th century. I mean, this was going on in Bulgaria. I could not believe it the other day when Theresa May met, I think it was the guy from Turkey that she was meeting, and she said, oh, Britain and Turkey have been wonderful allies for 400 years. And I thought it was only a century ago that those Turks were taking one white boy out of every family in Bulgaria and taking him as a slave. When you look at the massacres that went on there,
the one thing I did find out about it was the Red Indians had slaves, black slaves, believe it or not. Which was what was fascinating about it was this: some Negroes in America today, especially some celebrities like Morgan Freeman, have always claimed that they had Indian blood. Because their ancestors were taken as slaves, but when they were tested for it, there didn't seem to be any Indian at all, maybe 1% at most, which meant in many ways that the Indians never actually used them sexually.
I think a big difference is when a white man had a slave, when a white man owned a slave, he had paid a lot of money to get that slave. He paid a lot of money to get the black slave, and the black slave was bought from other blacks in Africa. If he'd stayed in Africa, he may have been eaten. He certainly would have been mistreated, and he never would have been as looked after as well as if he went to America. So he went to America, he was bought for a large sum of money by a slave owner. The slave owner would clothe him, he would probably teach him how to read, he would civilize him in certain ways, and he would feed him and he would keep him warm, and that slave would have a much better life than he would have had in Africa, because he was a prisoner already in Africa. They would have either, if they couldn't have sold him, they would have either killed him or eaten him. So that slave would have had a much better life in America underneath the white slave owner. And if you contrast that with what went on with the Muslim slave owners, they would, as I say, they would kidnap white people, they would snatch them and take them away and mistreat them. Of course, they would eventually get sold, but it was a completely different trade and a completely different way of treating the cargo or the property, whatever you want to call it, than it was in America. The American slave trade was nothing like the way that we see it in the Hollywood films, in the mistreating of them. I mean, why would you mistreat something that you've just paid out lots of money on? If you just spent 10 grand on a car, you're not going to mistreat that car. You're not going
to this is a point I've always made.
Harm it.
I do think that a lot of people do learn their history from Hollywood, and Hollywood is not the place really to be learning any truths about anything these days. From what I've looked into numbers of things, and there's question marks all over the place.
And there was also the indentured servitude At one point in Britain, they would round up any people that were on the streets, and they would kidnap them, and they would put them on boats, they would send them to America, and then for 8 years they would have to serve as an indentured servant. And they were treated much worse than the Negro was, because the Negro, they had to pay a lot of money for. The indentured servant, they didn't. You know, this must have been pretty harsh for the people that were taken over there to America. Yeah. But I think they justified it as in, well, they're not going to make anything of themselves here in Britain on the streets. If we send them over to America, they'll learn a trade, but with this indentured servitude, and then they'll, when they're free after 8 years, they'll be able to make a living. And the end, it did end positively, but not for a few generations. You got a large amount of white American working class that probably came from that. But you know, you can't justify snatching people and sending them off to another country just because they're not really doing anything. They should have been looking after the people here in Britain. And the reason why they weren't looking after the people here in Britain was because of the Jews being involved in the money supply with the usury and the factories and the factory work and the workhouses that all came about because of it. You had the rich people.
And don't forget this. The ships were all by Jews as well.
Yeah, well, you had the rich people living in the cities, and they took over the countryside, and they wanted to clear the countryside from the people that were living on it, that were farming the sheep, especially up in Scotland and in Ireland. So you had this top classes, top aristocracy classes, which we know had all interbred with the Jews, and they had no loyalty to the poorer people. They had no loyalty to the villagers. You know, they would assuage their consciences by saying that if they went to America, they would be able to make something of themselves. But it must have been pretty nasty. I mean, it's the same as the when they would send people to Australia for stealing a sheep or something because they were starving. And they would send them off to Australia. You know, if you contrast that with how things were 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. When, if you lived in Britain, you were given a spot of land that was yours for good, and you were not allowed to sell it, and you had rights to hunting and fishing and water and firewood. You had a lord that you owed your allegiance to if he needed to go into battle, but you had rights. You know, your children couldn't be taken from you, your house couldn't be taken from you, your tools of trade couldn't be taken from you. And then once the Jews came in with William the Conqueror, it all started to change. And all those ancient laws that we had in Britain that guaranteed our rights and that were there because we were a united nation, they all got changed to the benefit of the bankers. So the bankers could then own land. They could buy the land from you. How can you own the land? It's your territory. Your ancestors paid in blood for that land. They defeated the people that tried to invade and take over. So you can't sell it on. And yet, because this mindset, this Jewish mindset, that you can own everything and sell everything to make the most profit, because of that, we now end up with our children not being able to afford houses because there just isn't enough housing for them. And to try and make more money for the people at the top, we've got to bring in more people, which means even less houses. It's even worse in
America because they're owning the water now. These private companies are billionaires. They managed to change the laws in the land down in Texas, for instance, whereas you can funnel down, and if you can find that water's yours. These laws were changed by congressmen being bribed, by the way, for this particular billionaire down there who now owns the rights to this water, which is a God-given need when you're born. I mean, you know, water is, you know, it shouldn't belong to anybody, only the people of that country. But consequently, the Bushes now have bought land down in South America with the same ideas of controlling this water. And eventually people are going to, I mean, what they did in Africa was they managed to drain the water from Africa, bottle it and sell it back to them.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, but we all need water. We all need a roof over our heads. We all need warmth. All these things, you know, they were guaranteed rights. If you think about it, you know, heating, electricity, transport, all of those things are things that we require, and they're also infrastructure that our ancestors built, and yet a foreign company supposedly owns them. How could that be sold to a foreign company when it was our ancestors that built it, from all the metal and the ore that was found in our country? The coal in our country was used to build it. It was our intelligence and integrity with our engineers and designers, and yet now it's all owned by foreign companies. Somehow it's been sold to foreigners. When really, that was built by our ancestors so that we had warmth, so that we had transport, so that we could get around the country. And yet we're charged for using it.
Exactly. What our ancestors built. It's like the North Sea oil, when Thatcher sold off all the oil cheap to the Rothschilds. It was the nation's oil, and yet she had it privatised or sold to the private companies of Rothschilds for pennies on the pound. It was blatant traitorism.
It's all doing what's best for the individual instead of what's best for the nation.
Exactly, which is totally opposite to what Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists did with Germany.
Well, it's just the opposite of nationalism, isn't it? That's the way they've done it. They offer huge amounts of money to people in the government to do certain things, and the individual thinks, well, that's look at all that money for me. I'll have that. Yep. Instead of thinking, well, no, I'm not going to do that, because that means taking all of that away from the nation.
You need morals for that, though, Sven.
Yeah, well, again, this is why they chip away at that with everything at the schools and in the television, in the books, in the newspapers, everywhere. You've got to chip away at the morals, tell people that it doesn't matter what you do, just do what's best for you, and it doesn't matter so long as nobody else complains. This is how they get away with encouraging the things like homosexuality and transvesticism. It's fine for you to do it. It doesn't matter about the others. You do what's best for you.
Exactly. I mean, a handshake once over would seal a deal, but you couldn't trust doing a handshake today. You couldn't.
Well, more than that. I mean, in Japan, people leave their smartphones out on the table if they go out for a cigarette to mark their place. That's the sort of thing you can do in a homogenous society. Yeah. When you've got a society that's filled with all different peoples, all out for themselves, you can't do that.
Well, that's a smile that the Asians down in Nottingham were complaining about the Romanov and Romanian gypsies down there, because they were actually upsetting the Asians.
Well, this is it. I the BBC will do this as well. They'll have a little bit on the television that's against immigration, and what they'll do is they'll put a Negro there or a Pakistani to be speaking the argument against immigration, to try and kid us that these people are just like us. They're British citizens now. They have a piece of paper that says they're British. They don't have shared ancestry that goes back thousands of years like the British people do. They just have a piece of paper. They're nothing to do with us. Even Muammar Gaddafi knew that was wrong. He wrote that you have to have a shared ancestry. You can't just have a shared piece of paper. You can't build a state on just not actually having anything in common with one another, which is what we're trying to do here with the multiculturalism and the New World Order. It's impossible. It can never work. It can never work.
No, I mean, it's being forced at the moment, but if ever that was to wake up, it would soon collapse, and it would.
Well, if ever it was showing signs of collapsing, I'd say it's today, Dennis. I think definitely seeing signs of it collapsing today.
I'll be surprised if France don't pull out of the EU. I think that's going to be a failed venture, to be honest.
I think so. I think Marine Le Pen is going to win, but anyway, we'll continue to be here every Friday to talk about what's going on with the EU, and also what went on in the past in Europe with the Third Reich, our favourite subject. So I'll say thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday, same time, same place at Radio Aryan. Have a great weekend.
You're tuned in to Radio Arian.